everyone. I call the remote meeting of the House Higher Education Committee to order. Today we'll be having an oversight of Minnesota State Colleges and University presentation, I should say, and presentation from the Office of Higher Education. Before we proceed, I will have our committee legislative assistant take the roll. Please proceed.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Chair Bernardi, present. Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Vice Chair Christensen, present. Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative O'Neill, present. Representative Albright.
Present.
Representative Albright, present. Representative Daniels.
Daniels, present.
Representative Daniels, present. Representative Erickson.
Erickson, present.
Representative Erickson, present. Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen. Representative Heinzman.
Present.
Representative Heinzman, present. Representative Howard. Representative Howard. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, present.
Representative Keeler, present. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, present.
Representative Cleborne, present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Representative Kosnick, present. Representative Crenshaw. Representative Crenshaw. Representative Mason.
Mason, present.
Representative Mason, present. Representative Meckland.
Meckland, present.
Representative Meckland, present. Representative Noor.
Noor, present.
Representative Noor, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Sandell, present. Representative Sandstead.
Present.
Representative Sandstead, present. Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson. Representative Hansen. Representative Crenshaw. Representative Howard. Representative Thompson. Madam Chair, a quorum is present. Madam Chair, you're on mute.
Thank you very much. I'd like to have a motion to approve. Representative Thompson?
Yes, Thompson, present.
Okay, Representative Thompson moves approval of the minutes for February 8th, 2022. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, the motion prevails. And the minutes for February 8th, 2022 are approved. Beginning today, we will be hearing from Minnesota State. With us, we have Trustee Roger Moe. Welcome to our committee, Mr. Moe, and please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, members of the committee. For the record, I am Roger Moe, a member of the Board of Trustees and chair of the board's Finance Committee. With me today is Devinder Malhotra, the Chancellor of Minnesota State, Bill Mackey, Vice Chancellor for Finance and Facilities, Paul Shepard, the Systems Director of Student Development and Success, and Brian Yolitz, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities. I'll make a few comments, if that's okay, from the board's perspective, and then Chancellor Malhotra will share with you an overview of the system's priorities. Bill Mackey will discuss the supplemental budget request, and Brian Yolitz will discuss our bonding requests. Paul Shepard, who, as you heard from our student organizations, has been leading our efforts on addressing student basic needs and will share the work in this critical area. Chair Bernardi, members of the committee, Minnesota State is excited to be this committee's partner in this important work. We were before this committee last year with an overview of how Minnesota State is and who we serve, but I thought I'd provide a quick reminder of our system's governance structure. Our system has 54 campuses and is governed by a 15-member board of trustees, three of which are students, appointed by the governor, confirmed by the Senate. We are all volunteers who are absolutely committed to the success of Minnesota State, our students, and the communities we serve. To give you an idea of the size and scope of the system, our colleges and universities educate 340,000 students each year across the state. And of that number, more than 66,000 are students of color and Indigenous students. More than 70,000 are age 25 or older. 68,500 are low-income students. More than 42,200 are the first in their family to attend college. And almost 9,000 are veterans and service members. Our 30 colleges and 7 universities serve as catalysts for social and economic vibrancy. Minnesota State is the most powerful and effective resource that the state has to ensure opportunity and prosperity for its citizens and communities. Our colleges and universities serve students no matter where they are on their educational journey, from a certificate all the way to an applied doctoral program, high school students or recent grads, students returning to complete a degree or start another, and adults already in the workforce who need or want additional education and training. We form partnerships with employers across the state to ensure graduates entering the workforce are ready to contribute the first day on the job. And we produce more graduates for jobs in critical high demand fields such as healthcare and information technology than anyone else in the state. Most recently, the Minnesota State Health Force Center of Excellence worked with our colleges and universities to address critical staffing shortages in healthcare. With less than 1 week notice, 16 of our colleges provided emergency training for approximately 400 members of the National Guard for deployment as emergency temporary nursing assistants. This initiative was scaled up to recruit, train, and deploy 1,000 new CNAs by the end of January. With this good work, we all know we have to do better with understanding employers' needs, shifting faster to address the changing workforce, and most importantly, it's our job to think long-term and where we need to be in the next 10 and 20 years. Madam Chair, I want to say a few words about our supplemental budget request and our bonding request before the legislature this session. Last session, Minnesota State asked for what we needed, which was $120 million in new funding to support our campuses and directly support our students' critical needs. We are grateful to this committee for supporting our colleges and universities and the students that we serve, but there was a gap in the funding received. That is why we are asking for $60 million in new funding to provide support to our campuses, provide the necessary resources students need to address their basic needs in mental health, address the workforce gap through programming that serves businesses and industry, such as the healthcare example I provided earlier, and to be able to freeze tuition next year. Vice Chancellor Bill Mackey and System Director Paul Shepard will provide further details later on in our presentation regarding each of these components. Regarding our $292 million bonding request, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities Brian Yolitz is here to provide further details about the projects within our request. But I'd like to say a few words about the process our system and board go through when creating the list we bring forward to the legislature. Capital requests that come before the legislature are part of an ongoing, deliberate planning process that brings only the highest priority needs to you for your consideration. The process starts with the Board of Trustees' guidance on the recurring campus academic and capital planning, as well as specific guidance for individual program requests. At the college and university level, campus leaders use this guidance in developing their individual comprehensive facility plans that document facility conditions and asset preservation needs, as well as major capital projects to modernize our campuses and best serve their missions. In preparation for the state of Minnesota capital bonding cycle, candidate capital projects are rigorously vetted, peer reviewed, and scored before being considered as part of the Chancellor's recommendation to the Board of Trustees for our review and ultimate approval. As you can see, our system has a robust process in place that puts only the highest priority needs in front of you for your consideration. Before I turn it over to Chancellor Malhotra, I'd like to say thank you to the many legislators who attended the 45 campus bonding visits we hosted this fall. We believe these bonding tours give you a glimpse of the experience of our students, the synergy that our campuses have with their communities, and the partnership that we have developed with employers who rely on the talent that Minnesota State produces. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your time. With your approval, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Chancellor Malhotra.
Thank you very much. And welcome to the committee, Chancellor Malhotra. Please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Bernardi, members of the committee. I'm Devinder Malhotra, Chancellor of Minnesota State. It is great to have Trustee Roger Moe on Minnesota State Board of Trustees. And I also appreciate the leadership of our board chair, Jay Coles, and all of our trustees. They all volunteer and give a great deal of time to the work that we all do. I would like to thank them for their commitment to Minnesota State. As many of you know, then Senator Moe was the chief author of the bill that formed Minnesota State. I often refer to him as Minnesota State's creator. First and foremost, Chair Bernardi, I want to thank our amazing colleagues, particularly the frontline workers who continue to go above and beyond in providing a safe, warm, and dry environment for our students and our campus communities. Their work has enabled us to keep all of our campuses open through the pandemic. Chair Bernardi and members of the committee, I also want to thank you for your partnership last session and for all committee members for their engagement with our campus leaders. As has been the case since the onset of the pandemic, our top priorities are protecting the health and safety of our students, our faculty, and our staff, and supporting our students as they continue to progress towards their educational goals. In the midst of the pandemic, our colleges and universities graduated over 60,000 students, and these graduates are an integral part of the Minnesota's economy. As Trustee Moe indicated, we have to continue to be laser focused on the workforce development, which is a vital element for the well-being of every community in Minnesota and indeed the state of Minnesota. This session is a tremendous opportunity for you to make a substantial investment in higher education and have a direct significant impact on our ability to provide enhanced access, graduate and credential even more students, and meet the workforce needs across Minnesota. Our $60 million supplemental budget request would comprise less than 1% of the projected budget surplus. The Minnesota State Board of Trustees approved $60 million supplemental budget request for your consideration. This request will provide the necessary base funds our colleges and universities need to support our students, faculty, and staff, and help meet the state's workforce needs. Our commitment to Equity 2030, closing the achievement gaps, and meeting the workforce needs of the state will require sustained state support and investment. Our supplemental budget request also highlights our focus on affordability by asking you to fund a tuition freeze in the upcoming year. To support our students, we are requesting additional funding in the area of basic needs and mental health. I want to thank the student organizations for their partnership in this work. Under our system director, Paul Shepard's leadership and the work of Students United, the statewide university student organization, and LEAD-MN, the statewide college student organization, we are aggressively pursuing strategies to provide access to resources to all students throughout the system to enable them to meet their basic needs. I look forward to continuing our partnership with statewide student organizations on this work. Regarding our capital budget request, the HEPR funding and the projects before you are more than about bricks and mortar. They are about the students we serve and their success. For example, the recently funded Anoka Ramsey Community College Business and Nursing Renovation Project will allow nursing students at Anoka Ramsey a space that will move them out of crowded hallways into state-of-the-art classrooms. The project was crucial for the Anoka Ramsey Nursing Program. The program educates 285 students, of which 38% are Pell eligible or come from low-income families. 20% are first-generation college students, and 33% are students of color or those of Native origin. After graduation, 93% of the graduates find related employment. There is high demand for a limited number of seats in Anoka Ramsey Community College's nursing program. The bonding project the legislature funded will allow the college to expand the program and provide lab and simulation spaces more conducive to current pedagogy for nursing skills, impacting the ultimate success of the nursing students in passing licensure exams and working in the field. Madam Chair, this is just one example of many throughout our colleges and universities. By funding Minnesota State's infrastructure needs and additional allocations for campus and student support, the legislature is ensuring enhanced access and higher success for all students throughout our great state. Madam Chair, now, with your permission, I would like to turn the presentation over to Vice Chancellor Bill Mackey, who will provide further details about our $60 million supplemental budget request. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you very much. I would like to ask Bill Mackey to introduce himself and proceed. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, members of the committee. For the record, I am Bill Mackey, Vice Chancellor for Finance and Facilities with Minnesota State. We appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony on Minnesota State's supplemental budget request. We've put a presentation up on the screen that will help guide our discussion in providing detail about our supplemental budget and later our capital bonding requests. Going back to last session, our biennial budget request focused on providing affordable access to higher education in Minnesota, and we had two main priorities, campus responsiveness and stabilization, and equity and affordability. Those remain our priorities in our $60 million supplemental budget request. We have $30 million we're seeking for campus responsiveness and stabilization, and it's referred to as campus support on the slide in front of you, and $30 million to support equity and affordability, which are the line items starting with tuition freeze, mental health resources, workforce development, and student basic needs. Please advance the slide. State appropriation and tuition revenue comprise the majority of the operating revenue for our colleges and universities. This ongoing revenue helps ensure our colleges and universities can offer the necessary programs and services to fulfill the needs of their students and the needs of their communities, region, and the state. Revenues based on semester to semester enrollment tend to fluctuate at a faster rate, so a certain level of core stable funding is needed to serve our students as our programs and services remain relatively stable, even if enrollment fluctuates slightly. The $45 million in campus support that Minnesota State was fortunate to receive in the biennial budget is supporting our campuses. However, not having any new funding for the second year of the biennium will put extreme pressure on our campuses to cover annual cost increases, such as compensation, as well as higher than originally planned inflationary costs on non-compensation and non-personnel expenses. New state appropriation for $30 million for fiscal year 23, which is referred to as campus support on this slide, would provide the necessary funding to help stabilize campus operations. Next slide, please. To assist with our goal of student affordability, Minnesota State is also seeking $25 million in state appropriation to support an undergraduate tuition freeze for the 22-23 academic year. These funds would be utilized in lieu of a potential tuition increase of 3.5%. The tuition language in last session's higher education bill allowed the Board of Trustees to increase tuition each year of the biennium up to that amount. For the 21-22 academic year, undergraduate tuition was increased by 3.4%. This funding for tuition relief and the campus support funding go together. As I mentioned earlier, the system relies almost equally on state appropriation and tuition revenue to fund campus operations. If campuses do not have access to new revenue of both types, they may be forced to reduce programs and services. A second component of our equity and affordability priority is a $2 million request to address workforce gaps through innovative career, technical, and professional programming serving business and industry in areas where there are training gaps. These funds would be utilized at the colleges and universities to develop new or sustain existing programs in high growth, high demand industries and occupations, as well as align programming for the Minnesota Future Together grant program through the Office of Higher Education to meet needs of high demand sectors such as advanced manufacturing, agriculture, healthcare services, information technology, early childhood transportation, and other areas with local need. Support for career and technical education programs includes partnerships with local businesses to connect high school students with in-demand, skilled, and technical careers. Chair Bernardi and members, thank you for your support of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and again for the opportunity to provide testimony today. With your approval, I would like to turn the presentation over to Dr. Paul Shepard, System Director for Student Development and Success, to provide information related to the system's basic needs and mental health initiatives and funding requests.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor Mackey. And with us now is Dr. Shepard. Please introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paul Shepard and I serve as the System Director for Student Development and Success. I have the honor to work with colleagues across our system and student leaders and our statewide student associations, Lead MN and Students United, on our comprehensive approach to addressing basic needs in security and mental health. Funding in the request to address mental health would enable the implementation of critical support initiatives for students at all Minnesota State colleges and universities. Conversations with clinical staff, counselors, and students throughout Minnesota State has revealed the need for a combination of resources and support that supplement the critical work performed by counselors and therapists at our colleges and universities. Funding in the request would enable Minnesota State to pursue agreements with technology platforms to provide accessible and inclusive supplemental mental health support for students that would include peer support, crisis response, and complementary clinical support available online 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. Funding would also provide opportunities to scale successful evidence-based practices, such as professional telepsychiatry services and mental health-focused training opportunities for students, faculty, and staff, designed to expand awareness and understanding of a range of mental health topics. The supplemental budget request includes funding to sustain critical resources to support to address basic needs and security experienced by students across our system. Basic needs and security, such as lack of access to food, housing, transportation, childcare, technology, and emergency financial support, represent a significant threat to the ability of students to progress through the educational experience. Basic needs and security disproportionately impact students of color, students who are first in their families to attend post-secondary education, students who are from low socioeconomic backgrounds, and students with other underrepresented identities. Throughout this past year, Minnesota State Basic Needs Committee, which is composed of a majority of students appointed by LEAD-MN and Students United, has worked with me and staff at our colleges and universities to pursue creative ideas to enhance centralized support to address basic needs and security. The work has led to the pursuit of a unique and creative partnership with United Way's 211 program to establish a centralized basic needs resource hub for Minnesota State students. The United Way 211 program is an interconnected statewide network connecting people in Minnesota with basic needs services and support in their local community via phone, text, or chat 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. Minnesota State will provide the 211 program team with a comprehensive list of basic needs resources available at each Minnesota State college and university. So when students contact the basic needs resource hub via phone, text, or chat, the 211 program resource specialists will provide students referrals to basic needs resources available on their campus and in their local community. As part of this partnership, we will work collaboratively to follow up with students to ensure they receive the help they need. This is a unique and innovative strategy that, as far as we can tell, has not been implemented elsewhere in the United States at our scale. We are in the active stages of developing a contract with the United Way 211 program and are targeting a fall 2022 launch of the Basic Needs Resource Hub. Funding in this proposal, is essential to ensure the long-term sustainability of this unique service for students. The request also includes funding to pursue other creative and innovative initiatives and partnerships to enhance basic needs resources and support at all Minnesota State colleges and universities. Funding provided by the legislature in the last session enabled Minnesota State to design a number of exciting initiatives to enhance our capacity to address mental health and basic needs and security at our colleges and universities. Base funding for mental health and basic needs included in our supplemental budget request would provide an opportunity to sustain efforts currently underway and pursue additional resources for students. Madam Chair, with your approval, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Associate Vice Chancellor Brian Yolitz, who will provide further detail about our capital budget request.
Thank you very much. And Associate Vice Chancellor Yolitz, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't know if you wanted to address some hands that I see raised in the supplemental request, or if you want me to proceed.
I will check with Representative Heitzman. Would you like to pause now, Representative Heitzman, answer your question, or are you saving it for the end? How about you, Representative Daniels?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine has to do with questions on how the $30 million for campus support, how that's divided up. And that was one of my couple questions there.
Okay, let's have this next presentation, if you don't mind, and then we will go to questions for all of our guests. So, hey, Associate Vice Chancellor Yolitz, please proceed.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Chair Bernardi and committee. I'm Brian Yolitz, and I serve the Colleges and Universities of Minnesota State as Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities. I'd like to begin with a word of thanks. You and your colleagues provided Minnesota State with more than $90 million for capital investments for our colleges and universities in the 2020 bonding bill. These funds are in use now and making a difference, with nearly 40 HEPR projects underway and some already complete, making campuses warm, safe, and dry. 2020 funding also included four campus projects, including the construction of the Anoka Ramsey Community College Business and Nursing Facility that Chancellor Malhotra outlined, which is about halfway complete at this time. And then the project at Normandale Community College is nearly complete. We expect to have that available for our summer term and looking forward to that. In addition to those two designs for projects at Minneapolis College and Pine Technical and Community College are well underway and ready for construction funding this session. Next slide, please. Turning to this session, Minnesota State's 2022 capital program request is for $292 million, a program of $292.9 million. More than half of it is for our prior board's number one priority of asset preservation through HEPR, funding nearly 70 projects across the state of Minnesota. The balance of the request is to fund specific design and or construction work for 20 individual projects depicted by the stars on this map. 10 of these or half either fund the construction of design work that was provided in funding in prior sessions or fully funds the design and construction of campus projects. The other half will fund designs now in preparation for construction funding and requests in the future. Of note, 13 of these projects were included in our 2020 and 2021 capital budget request, but were not funded. Next slide, please. Your colleagues in the Capital Investment Committee were very busy this past fall. They, along with their counterparts in the Senate and staff from the Minnesota Management and Budget, as well as the Governor's Office, made some 45 stops to our college university campuses to review the projects and priorities in our request. These projects are listed in priority order on this slide, as well as on page 10 of our bonding book that I think was made available to you all as part of our resources from this, for our testimony time today. Next slide, please. The number one priority is for $150 million in higher education asset preservation or replacement or HEPR funding. This would fund preservation projects like roof replacements, mechanical and utility system upgrades at every college and university in the Minnesota state system, saving energy, making campuses safer, and reducing operating expenses. As background, in the five bonding years between 2012 and 2020, Minnesota State has requested $610 million for HEPR. In all of the bonding bills in that period, Minnesota State received $178.8 million in HEPR funding, or less than 30% of the requested amount needed to address the urgent preservation needs of the colleges and university academic facilities, leaving the majority of these preservation needs unmet. As a result, we've seen the backlog of maintenance in our academic buildings grow. Since 2012, our estimated backlog has grown by 63% to $1.2 billion. In addition, we see an estimated $1.3 billion in building systems and components exceeding their useful lives and needing investment in the next 10 years. Together, we have a roughly $2.5 billion 10-year renewal need to address those building systems and backlog and take care of the items as they age out over the years ahead. Next slide, please. Our individual project priorities start with a Weld Hall renovation at Minnesota State University Moorhead. This project, along with the following three, the Inver Hills Community College Technology and Business Renovation, Minneapolis College Management Education Building Renovation, and Pine Technical and Community College Labs, Trade Labs project, have prior year funding for design totaling more than $3 million and are ready for construction funding this session. Next slide, please. The next set of projects starting at priority number six, the design of the St. Paul College Academic Excellence renovation through priority 14, the Metropolitan State University Cyber Security Program lab renovation, were all in our request in 2020 and 2021, as I noted, but were not funded. In this group, after a relatively modest but important projects at Vermilion Community College and the East Grand Forks campus of Northland Community and Technical College and the Brainerd campus of Central Lakes College, is a request for design and initial renovation work to set the stage for the replacement of Armstrong Hall at MSU Mankato. Armstrong Hall is the main academic facility on the MSU campus and has exceeded its useful life and needs to be replaced with a smaller, more effective and flexible classroom facility to serve the university through the 21st century. Also in this group is our projects to design the Center for Disciplinary Collaboration, Engagement, and Learning at Winona State University, which aims to be the first net zero facility to be completed within our capital programs. In addition, designs for the Integrated Manufacturing Workforce Lab at Lake Superior College helps the college move out of trade spaces that are currently in lease spaces downtown Duluth, as well as design for the North Hennepin Community College Center for Innovation and the Arts. Finally, in this request is design for renovation in support of the Cybersecurity Lab at Metropolitan State University. Next slide, please. The final group includes new projects in our capital request, which begins with the design and renovation of transportation, trades, and student service spaces at Alexandria Community and Technical and Community College, and runs through the request for renovations in Hutchinson for programs including healthcare, construction, as well as student service spaces at Ridgewater College. The request at Alexandria, Southwest Minnesota State University, Rochester Community and Technical College, and Minnesota West Community and Technical College are for design this session and will seek construction funding in the future. Finally, projects at Riverland and Ridgewater fully fund design and renovation of their campus facilities this session. Next slide, please. Chair Bernardi and committee, we have covered a great deal of information in our time together this afternoon. First, we covered our supplemental request for funding that would support stabilizing campus operations, address the cost of education, as well as support workforce gaps and address student needs. In our capital request for $292.9 million for asset preservation needs, and at all of our colleges and universities, as well as major capital investment for projects at our 20 institutions. We thank you for your time and attention this afternoon and are ready for any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Heintzman, are you on the line now? There you go.
Oh, I've been on the line, Madam Chair. Don't worry.
You didn't respond when I asked the first time. Go ahead.
I have a couple of things I wanted to address, if that was okay. Number one is the issue that was brought up as it relates to inflation. And we touched on it in the presentation, but it would be nice to understand better what specific areas at Minn State campuses are being most specifically affected by inflation and how. If you have a breakdown on that, that would be helpful. If not, it would be good to maybe follow up with the committee. And so we better understand specifically how that's happening. Of course, in the private sector, it's huge and affecting us massively. But if anyone from Minn State could specifically address it, that'd be great.
Who would like to do that?
Madam Chair, Representative
Chancellor Malhotra.
I will defer to Bill Mackey to provide those additional details.
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Chair Bernardi, I'm Representative Heintzman, and we can certainly provide additional information. The primary driver that Minnesota State has related to an increased cost from year to year relates to compensation. Our spending, depending on the campus, is anywhere between 70 and 80% of the operating budget is for personnel costs. We are still sorting out information related to the non-compensation costs, as we tend to get information from our campuses. But we've heard examples in working with, for example, some of our partners related to the increased costs of providing food service on our campuses, that some of the inflationary rates from year to year are broaching 10%. But we can certainly provide more information, but those are the main drivers.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Unfortunately, I'm not really getting a picture of how those costs are impacting. If you're saying it's only being driven by staff costs, in private sector situations, we're seeing fuel, we're seeing materials, we're seeing heat, we're seeing cooling, of course, coming as energy prices skyrocket. So there might be a bit of a disconnect in some of your comments as it relates to what we're seeing in the private sector. So I'm missing something there. But I did want to also mention some things that I wanted to commend you, Chancellor Mahantra. Pros being, I really am thankful that you did not follow what we saw at University of Minnesota with a vaccine mandate. This would have been devastating in rural communities. And my hat is off to you, Chancellor. Thank you for seeing the wisdom in avoiding that. Really a significant hurdle was avoided in that case. In-person classes, thank you for that also, Chancellor. And then I also want to commend the administration for being proactive and imposing a freeze on the increases in some of the compensation that would have otherwise moved forward. And I think that Minn State deserves a lot of credit for working on that and moving that. At the same time, I'm hoping to see some of the other mandates go away as soon as possible. And, you know, my daughters were two that were very specifically impacted. And I'd love to see more opportunities for students to be able to access campuses without those mandates. So those are some of the comments, and appreciate the response, although I would like a better, more detailed answer to the question on inflation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to get a better understanding. I've been in this committee quite a few years. When we're asking for $30 million for campus support, and I got the little spreadsheet there for different campuses, I'm just wondering how that's calculated. Is that a per pupil calculation, or is that the size of the campus or cost of the campus? So if someone could please help me out with that, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's Vice Chancellor Mackey.
That's correct. Right? Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Sure. Chair Bernardi, Representative Daniels, the Minnesota State has an allocation model, and there's several components of it that impact how much resources go to each institution. Enrollment is one of them. Another one is related to the facilities that each campus has. Another one is the type of academic programs they have. So, for example, some academic programs in the career and technical education area, healthcare, may cost more than a liberal arts or general education class. So those enrollment in those classes receive a higher rate than classes that are of lower cost. So we have this pretty sophisticated algorithm. And I think we may have shared parts of it last session when we were providing a financial overview, but it's fairly complex, and it takes into account instruction, academic support, student services, facilities, student success results, and all those things come together to drive an amount that goes to each one of our campuses. So it's kind of a combination of many different factors, and we can certainly provide more detail and information related to that. But there isn't any set amount at a macro level per enrollment. It's slice and dice many different ways.
Representative Daniels, do you have a follow-up question?
Yes, I have. Thank you for that, Chair Bernardi. And thank you, Mr. Mackey, for that information. I would love to sit down with you and go over that formula, because as we know, sometimes formulas can have positive effects, and sometimes they'll have negative effects. So I'd really like to understand that better. I've got one more question, Chair Bernardi. I'd like to know what the state colleges have set aside percentage-wise for their building maintenance. I know I've talked to the University of Minnesota, to a handful of people, and we're trying to come up with a 10-year pay down where they would have some skin in the game, and the state would have some skin in the game, and then after 10 years, the HEPA request would be done, and then it had to be turned over to University of Minnesota to maintain their own buildings, which I think is the prudent thing to do. So could somebody explain to me if there's a percentage or a dollar amount of all these HEPA requests? I guess some would have some type of skin in the game, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Chancellor Malhotra, who would you like to answer that question?
Madam Chair, Representative Daniels, I would defer to both Vice Chancellor Mackey and Associate Vice Chancellor Brian Yolitz.
Vice Chancellor Yolitz?
Madam Chair and Representative Daniels, indeed, we've got a guideline for our colleges and universities to invest $1 per square foot in their academic space, as well as the revenue fund spaces. And that's part of the their local campus budgeting process. And it's one of the metrics that we measure in terms of financial sustainability of our institutions to make sure that they're making investments in our academic spaces. Now, right now we've got around 22 million square feet of academic space. So that would relates to approximately 22 million a year. And it would take quite some time to work our way through the backlog of maintenance as well as major investments, particularly for some of our smaller institutions where they're relatively small in square footage and the cost of replacing major mechanical systems and roofs is a pretty long reach for them. So it's something to keep in as we consider an algorithm that would move some of that the funding strategy to institutions on their own.
Okay, thank you. Representative Dowd, I think you said that was your last question, is that right?
That's correct, thank you, Madam
okay,
Chair.
Thank you. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. I've spoken to individuals in my district in Woodbury who are business owners. And some of them are individuals who own businesses in Woodbury, but live elsewhere through the metro area. And one of the things they've said that has been so difficult during the last couple of years is retaining employees. They've worked hard to do it. And of course, we've given them some help with support of that. They say the reason they work so hard at it is, first of all, that they figure their employees are kind of like family. They want to keep them around. And second of all, they talk about the continuity of service. Now, I know that the number of students has fallen among MinState campuses. And the result has, in some places, been losing faculty. I know $60 million is an awful lot of money. But I was a little surprised that you didn't ask for more, perhaps, with the intention of using it to retain faculty who we might lose to other institutions or we might even lose from the teaching community. Have you thought of that, and what were some of your considerations?
Chancellor Malhotra.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Sandell, you're absolutely correct that even before the pandemic, because of the age demographics and smaller high school graduating classes, there was a downward trend on our campuses. And our colleges and universities are indeed becoming smaller. But as they become smaller, we also put in place ways in which we can transition to those smaller scale of operations as we have fewer students. And over time, we have made some tough decisions and we have made some very difficult decisions as we transition from a larger scale to a smaller scale, and which has often involved personnel decisions too. But I think the point I want to make here is that as our enrollments decline and as from a long-term perspective, our scale of operations become relatively smaller with fewer students, we make the necessary adjustments as we go along. And in the transition, you're absolutely right. That is getting additional support from state is very, very important as we make that transition. And that is precisely why we were a little concerned as to when we did not get all we asked in the last session, and we are coming back in the supplemental budget request in asking for additional funds. And that is why Vice Chancellor Mackey deliberately used two words, campus responsiveness, that is responding to the changing landscape of higher education, and campus stabilization. And that is as we come through this long-term trend, and then which accelerated during the pandemic. And as we move towards the endemic phase, we will have to keep that in mind. And it is in that regard we came back and precisely asked for that kind of money so that we can make that transition as smooth as possible as we move from larger operations to smaller school pool of students.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. I just wanted to say that I appreciate Minn State coming forward. This seems like a very reasonable ask. We had a very large ask just a couple days ago from the University of Minnesota system and close to $1 billion. And this is a much smaller, reasonable ask. And I appreciate that. I know you've taken a close look at what your actual needs are. You and I have had many, many conversations. And I also want to just reiterate the fact at how incredibly open your campuses are. I had said last time that I had taken a vacation, and unfortunately it was a working vacation, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, with Senator Rarick, and we toured Bemidji State, we toured the Technical College in Bemidji, and then we went to Thief River and toured their Technical College, and we're really impressed. And of course, I've been to many campuses, many, many, many campuses. Mankato, I've been to, of course, Pine Tech many times, and down in Faribault and so on. So I appreciate the openness and the willingness to host us and to share your faculty and your programs with us. At Bemidji State, I was particularly interested in the American Indian Resource Center, and it was just a fascinating place. And I would encourage anybody here to go up to Bemidji State and learn about what they're doing about incorporating Native American culture into their coursework and they're teaching Ojibwe, they're teaching history and culture, and they're having powwows on campus, and it's just what an amazing experience. So I want to thank you for that. In fact, it was interesting because I was at Bemidji State and I happened to run into someone from Mankato State, and they were learning Ojibwe too. And the reason I mentioned Mankato is because I've also been to Mankato and once virtually and then in person for about 3 hours. And I was on a quest, as I am often. I had a constituent ask me about some CRT things. And I said, well, let me just find out what's really being taught. I just want to know what it is. And so I went to Bemidji State and learned all about the Native American culture and history and a bunch of other things that they're doing, and we'll be exporting that out to the whole system, which I think is fabulous. Unfortunately, I really didn't get very far at Mankato State, and I just want to encourage the administration here to really hear us as legislators that I'm really just on a quest for information. I just want to know what's being said and taught and what students are learning. So I have not gotten that information. It's been a little bit of a bumpy road. So I just want to encourage you to please facilitate that for us as the legislature, as we look over those funds. And the last thing I wanted to say is I also had another constituent that brought to me a very, very troubling concern, especially being a woman myself, someone that is a fierce fighter for those dealing with injustice and harassment. And unfortunately, she described a horrendous workplace situation and has since left that job at one of your institutions. And it was, it's not been resolved. So I do have a question in all of this. I really want to know how, in general, how are you dealing with a hostile workplace, even when it's somebody that's very high in the administration, whether it be a president or someone, you know, that high that have that much power? How are you as an institution dealing with that? I know that the Department of Human Rights is investigating, and it really is rather a big deal. And I'm really concerned because it doesn't affect just the one person that left, but there are many that have been affected. And I'm just wondering if you could just offer the legislature a little bit of insight as to how do you deal with situations where you have someone in great power that is creating a hostile work environment.
Chancellor Malhotra.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, you know, on I'm With regard to personnel matters, I have some restrictions as to what I can or cannot discuss, but I want to assure you that having a robust, civil, respectful workplace is a very high priority for us. And we take all the concerns which are brought to us with regard to any violation of either relating to a workplace where there is disparate treatment or disrespectful treatment very, very seriously, and we follow those. We are continually engaged with our campuses in understanding as to how we assess the climate. We continually at the state level work with our faculty associations, work with our other bargaining units, work with our student associations, and engage them too, both formally and informally, in understanding where some of the formative work may be needed, where some of the interventions would be needed. And as we speak, particularly coming out of the pandemic, with anxiety levels high, with stress levels high, we are thinking more and more also how we can support our employees, our faculty and staff, and create that the kind of empowering ethos you are suggesting. And I want to assure you that's a high priority for us. And we are pursuing all the processes in an appropriate manner. And at the same time, also working very proactively and very formatively and engaging in putting in place a broad infrastructure where there is continuous flow of information both ways, so that we can nip in the bud some of the discord which often arises in complex organizations at the very early stages. And so as we speak, coming out of the pandemic, we are currently taking a complete overview of what needs to be done in this regard and what kind of additional structures and systems need to be put in place. So there is an ongoing monitoring, but at the same time, there's ongoing formative discussions going on and approaches and strategies being put in place and resources being made available so that our employees, faculty and staff feel empowered in their own professional spaces. And we position them so that they can maximize their own professional potential.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill, I believe you said that was your last question.
If I could just respond back just for half a second.
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chancellor Malhotra. I think it's really important that those that are in positions of power and authority take very seriously that power and don't take someone else's power from them. And so I'm glad to hear that you are instituting an institution-wide policy to make absolutely sure that those that are under someone's authority, they aren't mistreated and misused. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Mason.
The needs and requests I'm familiar with, but I have just been thinking a little bit more. The needs for things like food, for mental health, for what I would consider personal issues. It's not something that when I went to school, granted, it was a long time ago. These never came up. And so my question is, do you have enough information where you could answer my question, which is, do you see all of these personal needs as being attributed to, you know, all the issues that we are dealing with, like COVID, et cetera, that might go away in the future? Or is it maybe that you're getting more students that are coming into trying to get educated that maybe in previous years would not have applied to be in college?
Chancellor Malhotra.
Madam Chair, Representative Mason, great question. And I will, in a minute, defer to Paul Shepard, who can provide some additional details. But mental health issues, we have been seeing a rise among the student body nationally. for some time now, even before the pandemic. It definitely got accelerated during the pandemic because of the high stress and high anxiety. And who our students are, how they learn, and what the competing priorities they have on their time as they pursue their education, that has changed a lot, particularly as we have enhanced access and particularly as we pursue an educational model where we meet not only the needs of the students who are just coming out of the high school, but also needs which they will have for education during their lifetime. And with that, particularly on the specific issue of mental health, I'll defer to Paul Shepard in terms of the size and scope which we have seen in the last decade or so.
Dr. Shepard.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and Representative Mason. Yes, as the Chancellor mentioned, we've seen a steady increase in the number of reported mental health concerns that students are sharing as they arrive at our institutions. I think in a 2020 national survey, there were 30% of students who were coming to higher education with having previously seen a therapist or had some form of diagnosis as it relates to mental health. I know, Representative Mason, you also asked about food as well, and certainly the COVID-19 pandemic has made worse, but even prior to the pandemic, we were seeing increases in the number of students that were reporting concerns about being able to access food and how that interfered with their educational experience. In the fall of 2018 and 2019, Minnesota State participated in a comprehensive national survey of basic needs and security among college students. And the results of that survey indicated that 37% of our students had reported an instance of food insecurity within the previous 30 days of completing that survey. So we are seeing that increase. And I think your explanations that you shared in your questions are certainly a source of those concerns.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mason. And we are going to, we have three members that have question, and we'll all take a question from each of these members. And then we will start with Office of Higher Education. And if we have to invite them back next week, we will. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is around our faculty. A year ago, yesterday in this committee, we learned about all the program cuts that were happening because of the retrenchments and losing our faculty. Like I have notes that say that some of our universities were losing 12 to 13 programs. So we're coming back right now, and I've had conversations with you, Chancellor, about this, that my fear is that we're asking for money and we talk about campus support and part of that being instruction. We talk about workforce development and how we're going to address the gaps in our workforce, yet we're cutting programs and we're eliminating faculty. My question is, in all of those retrenchments and reductions, what administrative levels have been reduced? What administrative positions have been reduced? Because the reality is our students need faculty in front of them in classrooms. What I fear is that when I look at MSUM and what happened there, they did reduce one administrative role. In a world where MSTATE keeps saying we want to be equity focused in 2030, the one role that was eliminated was the chief diversity officer. That doesn't align for me. And so I do want to address this concern. As I've said here before, I really appreciate what the systems do for many of our students. I understand the affordability. I understand access. I just feel it's a little bit conflicting if we're not going to address reduction in our administrative costs, because those are way more expensive than our faculty reduction, yet we still see, we had a presentation last week about more reductions in staff and faculty happening when those are actually the bones of what our students need in this space to be successful students.
Chancellor Malhotra.
Madam Chair, Representative Keeler, last few years have been very tough for higher education for all the reasons you have pointed out. And we are also focused very much on the fact that we conserve as much resources as possible, which we can directly bear on the student learning and student support. And I think, in response to your question, with your indulgence, Madam Chair, we can provide you with additional information, what the trends have been in terms of the administrative costs and in terms of our cost reductions in faculty and staff and how they compare with each other. But overarching, our administrative structure is fairly lean by and large when we compare ourselves to national benchmarks. But rather than just depending on my memory, I think this is an important question and obviously of great concerns to you. So we can provide additional information which will lay out as to how the administrative costs have trended over time.
Representative Keeler.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to see that because having administration be lean is one thing. We've completely eliminated programs. That's less than being lean. So I would like to see those numbers and have honest conversations about that piece. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chancellor, are we able to access the financial reports for each of the 30 colleges on their websites, or how do we have access to those balance sheets so we can study the revenues, the expenditures, and as Representative Keeler noted, probably the absence of certain programs?
Chancellor Malhotra.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I'll defer to Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Vice Chancellor Mackey.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Erickson. Yes, we certainly have that information. It's located for all of our campuses on our system website with our audited financial statements, and I can get that information to the committee so you have access to it.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Either for the Chancellor or for the former Majority Leader in the Senate. I certainly appreciate the fact that my alma mater, Morehead State, has one of your highest priority projects in the bonding bill. Spent a lot of time in Weld Hall. Candidly, I think I did see some of the ghosts that legend has make their home in there. So I hope that when you renovate the building that you pay proper homage to the ghosts of students past. But to my point, it is intriguing, and I know that Lead O'Neill made remark about this, that both in your supplementary budget as well as in your bonding request, you serve a population that is, somewhat very comparable, as a peer to the University of Minnesota. But when I look at your bonding request in particular, I do note that there is a great disparity between your ask request and that of the University of Minnesota. And so I'm just curious as to what matrix or criteria you use. And would you observe or could you make observation that it is fundamentally different from that of the matrix or the criteria screening, if you will, that the University of Minnesota uses? Because we have two of our larger higher educational institutional systems, and there is a great dichotomy between the asks of both. And so I'm hoping the Chancellor or the Chair of the Board would expand on how those differences come about and how the priorities are set for your institution with these asks.
Chancellor Malhotra.
Chair Bernardi, Representative Albright, I, with regard to what goes into in determining the size and scope of our bonding request, I think I will defer to Associate Vice Chancellor Brian Yolitz, who can actually lay out as to what are the parameters we look through. We take that to the Board of Trustees and they then consider it and approve it, and then we bring it to you. But before we go to ABC Yolich's, maybe if Trustee Moe wants to say anything.
Trustee Moe.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, the process is fairly thorough. The board sets out certain guidelines, and then of course the campus leadership follows that as it relates both to their academic needs as well as the physical needs. And Associate Vice Chancellor Yolich and his division screen all of these requests very thoroughly. There's a great deal of time that's devoted to it. And as you well know, because of the bonding tours, there's many, many requests. And they have a process they go through in terms of priorities. They submit that to the chancellor. The chancellor reviews it and submits it to the board, and we go through it thoroughly, spend a considerable amount of time on it before we make the decision to advance it to you. So all I can say is it's a fairly thorough process. As you know, some of the requests that are on our list this year were on the list before. They have a way of kind of getting in the queue and then hopefully working their way up the ladder. But I yield to Associate Vice Chancellor Yolich as well.
Chair Bernardi and Representative Albright, indeed.
Mr. Yolich.
I'm sorry, I got a little bit carried away. There are some unique differences between our system and the University of Minnesota as well. The size and complexity of many of the facilities associated with R1 research university contrast to, say, Vermilion Community College. So there is that, I guess, that one premise there. It's also just the overall size of some of the facilities is what is a driver as well. But I think we've got a process where we try to methodically go through and take bites of things that we can get done. For example, we could have asked for MSU Mankato, that total project we're seeking in the 2022 legislative session, we're seeking design funding for that for $7 million. That total project with all phases is over $100 million. We just recognize that it's not appropriate to ask for all the money up front. So it's a bit of a different strategy. I know the colleagues in the Capital Investment Committee want to see that use the money within the biennium that it's authorized and appropriated. And then also we thought that it was important for us to continue to work our needs and our priorities regardless of what funds were available. So we made a conscious decision to stick by our strategy to continue to incrementally invest over time in our asset preservation. We see that we average about 30% of our requests. That's around $30 million in the biennium. So asking for a bunch more, we don't see that the list has been satisfied yet. So we didn't see a need to ask for $200 or $300 or $400 million in HEPR if the appetite and the ability of for the state to provide our original request was going to be effective. So I think we've got an appropriate process, and we'll continue to work our way through that and prioritize the needs to help you all be selective in your decisions. I know this committee helps provide some input into the Capital Investment Committee, but that's kind of our measured approach on that.
Okay, thank you. I see that we have two members' hands up, and so I think what I'm going to do is ask Representative Cleavorn the next question, and then Representative Erickson, is your hand up for another question or from before? There you go. Okay, thank you. I just wanted to see. Okay, thanks. It was in your mirror in the background. Okay, Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. I just
This is really a general statement. When we're thinking about the needs of our two institutions, and we're looking at the 10-year plan that these institutions, whether it's the state system or the University of Minnesota system, I believe the University of Minnesota has a $5.1 billion need over 10 years for this asset preservation piece. And the Minnesota State, if I have it correct, I think you have a $2.4 billion need that you would need to have addressed over the next 10 years. I don't think the question should be who's older, who's larger, who's got more complicated research facilities, which in fact is a different part of the equation. But how do we as the legislature help you meet the needs of our state and meet the needs of keeping our state facilities in a condition and ability to serve our state? So in looking at the long-term picture, I do appreciate you bringing these numbers forward so that we always know what we're looking at so we can do that long-range planning. But to try to compare Minnesota State and the University of Minnesota systems, it's not really apples and apples. So I just wanted to kind of bring that to the attention of some of our newer members on this committee. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any final questions? Okay, I don't see any further questions. And so I want to thank everyone for coming today and for this good discussion. And I know we will be seeing you more this session, and we look forward to that. So thank you for your presentation today to all of our testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you.
Much appreciated.
You are very welcome. And so the Office of Higher Education, thank you for your patience and your willingness to come back next week for your presentation. That's very gracious of you. And I would like to begin with Wendy Robinson, the Assistant Commissioner of the Office of Higher Education. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dr. Wendy Robinson, and I have the pleasure of serving as the Assistant Commissioner for Programs, Policies, and Grants for the Office of Higher Education. I'm also joined by Nikki Oliver, who will be driving the slideshow for me. And I just want to clarify, do you want us just to get as far as we can get today, or are there particular topics of most interest for the session today, and we'll finish up the rest next week?
I would say just begin your presentation, and we won't have questions today because unless there's a natural break in which we can ask some questions on that topic and then start next week, I'll let you decide on that. If there is a natural break, you know, that we could have, you know, a couple questions asked, we can do that. Otherwise, we will regroup next week, and then members can ask questions.
Thank you. That's very helpful, Chair Bernardi. And I think we will have a couple of natural breaks for some different topic areas, so I'll make sure to pause to see if there's questions or if there's a logical place to stop. So I would like to start my testimony on a personal note, if I may. While I've only been with the Office of Higher Education since March, I've been working in higher education for over 20 years and can say with confidence that the last 2 years have been some of the most challenging, but also some of the most inspiring. In the last 2 years, I've seen faculty, student affairs professionals, and campus and system administrators work unbelievably hard to meet the challenges posed by COVID while continuing to provide high quality education and support so that students can meet their educational goals. Given that we are quickly approaching the 2-year anniversary of the first positive COVID test in Minnesota, I believe this is a good time to provide an overview of the current landscape in higher education and focusing both on the COVID impact and response, as well as continued progress toward meeting our longstanding goals around college access, affordability, and attainment. In many ways, the pandemic has acted as a magnifying glass, making existing challenges even larger. One of the most critical trends to examine is the impact of COVID on college enrollment. As you can see from this chart, the decline in undergraduate enrollment, particularly in the community and technical college sector, was especially pronounced. As with many trends within higher education and within the pandemic, it's important to recognize that some populations were more impacted than others. Nationally, declines in enrollment were most significant in the Midwest region of the country and for male students, American Indian students, and Black students. And just for context, I'll note that when we talk about declining enrollment, we're talking both about students who may have exited higher education without earning their credential and those who might have been considering enrolling in higher education, but who opted not to enroll. Now that we've shared the national picture, I'd like to focus more specifically on Minnesota, and we'll echo some things you may have heard from both the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State folks. In some aspects, the picture for Minnesota was better than the national picture. Notably, while community and technical colleges saw a 10% decline in enrollment nationally from 2019 to 2020, Minnesota State's two-year colleges were down 5.3%. In terms of specific demographics, the largest enrollment declines in Minnesota were for international students, which makes sense given the challenges with travel restrictions and COVID-specific impacts that may have been happening in the sending countries. The international student population declined by about 17%. The next largest enrollment decline by percentage was in American Indian students, where we saw a 12.4% decline. We also followed national trends in that we saw a larger enrollment decline for male students than female students. Given that the state of Minnesota has an interest in the economic vitality of all of our communities, and that we want to see more Minnesotans attain a family-sustaining income, and that we know that obtaining a post-secondary credential is likely to improve the economic outcome for all of our citizens, declining enrollment continues to be a cause for concern. I'll share more about our overall progress on meeting the state's attainment goal shortly, but I'll note here that responding to declining enrollment will require action and intervention by the Office of Higher Education, as well as by our statewide colleagues from post-secondary institutions and from the K-12 sector as well. Minnesota is blessed with outstanding colleges and universities, and we are all committed to ensuring Minnesotans have access and opportunity. It's hard to talk about access and opportunity, of course, without talking about cost. We recognize that the cost of higher education is a primary concern shared by our students, and appropriate funding of higher education is a top priority for our state's higher education systems. We know that we'd all like to provide the highest quality education at a cost that is within reach of Minnesota families. I'd like to first share a quick snapshot of the overall trends regarding national costs of higher education. We know that the average cost of tuition and fees has been steadily increasing, though the speed of those increases, especially for public 2- and 4-year colleges, has slowed since the years immediately following the Great Recession, when many states reduced spending on higher education. This chart shows the national averages by sector, but on the next slide, we'll look at the Minnesota perspective. Comparing Minnesota to national average tuition changes per year since 2010 reveals that our 2-year public colleges have increased costs by 1.6% per year, while the national average was 2% per year. So this is maybe an example of a time when our students are perhaps happy to be a little bit below average. For our public 4-year universities, the national average for change has been about 2.2%. So Minnesota State is slightly above the average at 2.9%. But we do want to note here, however, that Minnesota State's 4-year institutions continue to be below the national average in terms of overall cost compared to other public 4-year institutions. The cost increases for the University of Minnesota have been slightly below average at 2.1% per year. Shifting from trends to specific numbers, you can see the current published tuition and fees for Minnesota institutions by category. A few things I'd like to note here are that Minnesota's 2-year colleges and the University of Minnesota schools are above the national average in terms of cost, but the 4-year colleges of Minnesota State and our private nonprofit institutions are below the national averages for costs. It's also important to note that while some sectors of our higher education offerings in Minnesota are higher costs than the national average, we do offset those costs through our state grant program, which is considered one of the strongest in the country for providing additional need-based aid. When talking about financial aid, it's also helpful to consider the role that student loans play in providing college access. So I do want to share a snapshot of the current student loan debt levels for Minnesota students. First, a bit of context. It's important to remember that not every student will graduate with loan debt. For example, 41% of University of Minnesota bachelor's degree graduates and 32% of Minnesota State's bachelor's degree graduates exit with no student loan debt. Nationally, the average loan debt per student is just over $37,000, But there's significant variation in what that average is depending on the type of degree earned and the type of institution attended, with associate degree students nationally having an average of just over $13,000. Looking at the Minnesota picture, you can see from the chart, the average debt levels have been fairly steady since 2017 and have even declined slightly for students in the associate's degree category and the bachelor's degree category since 2017, which is a positive direction to be going into. Continuing to look at the subject of financial aid, I do want to note the importance of making sure students complete the FAFSA prior to enrolling in higher education. One goal that OHE is working on is increasing the number of high school students that complete their FAFSA, with a particular interest in increasing application completions for the populations indicated on the chart you see before you. Increasing the number of students completing the FAFSA requires a multi-pronged approach and ongoing collaboration with our K-12 and higher education partners, as well as engagement with community stakeholders and families. We are doing things like providing virtual information sessions. We actually had over 500 people attend a virtual FAFSA information session last night, offering direct outreach to targeted high schools through our Gear Up and Get Ready programs and through online, print, and social media outreach and resources. One of the reasons that we want to see more students complete the FAFSA is to ensure that all students who are eligible for the Minnesota State Grant Program are able to access those funds. The Minnesota State Grant Program is one of OHE's signature programs and one of the most important ways that we can support students in accessing and completing higher education. As a reminder, our state grant program is need-based, does not require a separate application, and can be used at over 80 institutions. We're grateful for the ongoing support of this program, especially as we continue to pursue an ambitious attainment goal. And actually, this is probably a good stopping point in the interest of time. The next portion of the presentation will focus on where on the progress made toward the attainment goal and some of the updates on some of our other initiatives.
Thank you. You were definitely very efficient in your presentation. Next week, we'll have you slow down a little bit because it was really good information and I really want to absorb it. So thank you. Members, do you have any questions? I see Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's just a quick question. So when we look at the chart that you put forward with the amount of student debt, when you see a master's degree, does that also include the debt from their undergraduate degree or are they separate?
I believe that
Ms. Robinson.
Sorry, thank you, Chair Bernardi and Representative Cleavorn. I believe that it is the total debt that they've earned on the course of their educational pathway. So they sort of end up in the category for their highest degree earned.
Perfect. Thank you.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a little question for you at the end of this hearing. And I'm just wondering about region selection. Are we going to be having a joint committee to look at filling that vacant regent spot yet this session?
We do not have, I'll have to get back to you on that. I don't have an answer for you. And then do you have a question for Ms. Robinson?
Nope, I just had a question for you.
Okay. Well, it doesn't look like we have any more questions right now. So that worked out very well with that pause there. So thank you for coming back next week to visit us again. And thank you for presenting at your first committee and really good information. So members, with that, our next meeting will be on, I was gonna tell you when it is gonna be, and of course I don't have, there it is. It will be February 15th on Tuesday. And the day after Valentine's Day, a big day for next week. And so I wanna thank you all for being here today and the meeting is adjourned.